enough during the day. So I have to thank Joan and Jimmy a lot for having me, because it's a Pittsburgh tradition, and you're nothing if you're not part of your town's tradition, and I've been here my whole stinking 48 years, and I'm happy to be a part. So thank you, and thank you for the opening for Heart, because in fact, thanks to the Pittsburgh Foundation, Heart is back up and running, and we're going to be an online journal, and we are launching August 15th. If I had been good, I would have actually printed something in this day of electronic ages, but I didn't. But it's heartjournalonline.com. All the information is there, and we are now accepting submissions of poetry, fiction, art, essay, photos, everything that deals with social justice and fighting discrimination. So I'm very excited about that, and we're gonna have a kick-ass launch. It's going to be great. So thank you for giving me the mic for that, and I am going to read all new stuff, except the last poem, which is from one of my books. So this is a poem called Living with the Thin Girl, and I realized after I've read this a few times that I really like thin people. This is not against thin people. It's the idea that everybody has to be thin that is problematic. It's not that there's anything wrong with being thin. So I hope that's understood. But it's called Living with the Thin Girl. The thin girl burns calories, lifting hangers from the shopping rack. Hungry as anyone for a bargain. She is not obsessed with her waist or the way that her stomach laces her hips together like a rope bridge bent beneath the weight of the wind. The thin girl loves flowers. Find her in a meadow or in a bank, tucking a withdrawal slip in her pocket, or in a coffee shop, drinking chai, reading a poem about the scarecrow woman, feeling the deepest parts of herself swept up in a tornado of straw and chaff. The thin girl eats pancakes at the fundraiser, licking syrup with your tongue, wearing your clothes until she wearies of lycra, and Twinkies herself into sweats in front of the TV. She is fat with longing, starved. The thin girl eats you alive, cuts you with razor bones and dips you in gravy. Just imagine the bite of one so slight that the space between the door and the jam is expanse. And squeezing through the hinges, she slips away. And you don't notice she's gone until you see yourself in the mirror, sad face, soft belly. These next two poems are about my father, who would die 1,000 more deaths than he already did if he was here. Or he just wouldn't understand them, so that would be cool too. But if you're going to be an asshole father, you should know you shouldn't have a poet as a daughter. That's my theory. He's dead, so it doesn't really matter. This one's called Running with Daddy. I see my father again, though he is not here. I am running with the dog through the rain. It is Sunday. Each step is a cadence. Good dog, bad dog, bad dog, good. I break my pace. Nearly 30 years I have been racing this downpour. Running the streets of my memory. Wrong address, wrong house, empty mailbox, key under the porch, key under the rock, broken lock. I picture my father, and he is sad. Sad to be dead because he misses his cars. And the way money made him feel like he could give something, like he could take something away. He is thin and weak, and I can outrun him. I have my own house now, and I let myself in. I am sweaty and salt, breathing heavy with the hill in my lungs, the dog on the leash pulling. I stop and let the dog go. I sit down and write the letter. I have been writing 30 years now in the language he taught me, in the language I know. the salutation and the closing, one and the same. Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye. He doesn't get off that easier. There's one more dead dad poem. It's called 250 Rebel. In the dream, I wanted badly for my father to fix my motorcycle. I kept handing him wrenches, worried that I would forget had forgotten how the gears work. I would have forgiven him everything to get it started, to feel the spread of the leather between my legs, to be able to leave like that with no direction except away. Except he was elusive, the way fathers are, dreams. He shook his head and was frail. I knew he was sick because he always has had been. I knew he could fix it. I knew he wouldn't. This is a poem called The Way Out. I don't really know what to say about it. I realized after I put this together that a lot of my things come from dreams or from symbolism or things that I see a lot. And this is one of those poems. It's called The Way Out. I want to write a letter to everyone I know and ask about the man. About the man, the swing, the empty house, and the smokestack. The smell of mildew, oil, wood. You see, he left me nothing. I remember nothing as if there is nothing to remember. Except in my dreams, there is a man, a swing, an empty house, and a smokestack. You see, there is his back. And once in a dream, I saw my daughter behind him. My daughter, but me. Me, but not my daughter, not the man. You see, I will kill him if he touches her. It is the only thing I know. It is the smoke, the swing, the house. It is the oil wood, the mildew. It is the stench, you see. It is the mother who should have been there, the father who shouldn't have left. It is the man's back, his face I can't see. It is the window. It is the door. So the next three are all new. Yay. And totally new. Like, I never read them before, and we don't, you know, and they're not published anywhere. And I don't even know if they're sent out anywhere. they're totally new. So this one's called Ides of March. The lover in me left without a note, a stray hair, a stocking in the drawer. Her scent is on your fingers, not mine. I don't miss her or her panties or her lies. How she said she would love you forever and wore your shirts to bed. How when she started packing, she called it laundry, cleaning up. How she let you take her to dinner and spent night after night drinking wine, reading you poems like Portent, The Ides of March. Between the pages, a rail ticket, the binding of straw. Between the words, another home without you in it, without me. Thank you. This is called If You Still Want to Marry Me Now. Is that laughable? I guess it is. I guess not. No one really wants to marry that, do they? Carry this small bag with you. In it, my heart and a wind tapping nervous, a pirate's split plank, preacher's rotten teeth. Brush against it as you walk to the chapel, feeling itch in your palm. How suddenly the sky is just short of everywhere and the boat full of wild. How to get here to there. Hold it on your tongue, burlap, bite, and dirty. Walk off the uncharted waves, heeding keeping your man body down. Then rise to the lip of the sea, splintered gums, salted skin, the preacher's last prayer blowing in your mouth. And should your soul fill with so much glory, give it to me. Give it to me now. It will take two to surrender. And this one's, I have two poems that I can't pronounce a word in, which is kind of embarrassing because I'm supposed to be a writer. But this is one of them, and it's in the title. And I screw this up all the time, and I should look it up. But it's called Love Like Cartographers, A Few Meteorologists, and an archaeologian. I don't know which it is. Archaeologian. Is that right? Archaeologian. Then that would mean he has logic. That's not it. Okay, so that's what it's called. The ice cubes are just ice cubes, and they melt like something mentioned in your geographical saddening. Your hand just shy of north, and your east eye ablaze with the sun risen over this body of ours we used to call one, this body of ours we used to call country. This stratosphere of warmer layers higher up and cooler layers further down. And I say, just wear my mind coat for a second. Let me sun your badlands, water draining down the back roads of this lonely, tepid town. The bar on the corner has a map to everywhere, and even the regulars know it. Climate is nothing short of boots and parkas. Oh, that's my own freaking phone. Check that out. I'm interrupting my own poetry reading. Don, could you make that stop? Can you make it stop? It's in that pocket right there, in the front pocket. Oh my God.
Answer is.
Did you get it? It went off. Sorry. Climate is nothing short of boots and parkas. But I am naked, and see, you just lit a match, and suddenly the air is sulfur and dinosaurs. And didn't I know you back then around the fire? Didn't I etch us into the wall over there? With your chalk, circle it, just above the waterline, the frost line, the freeze. I think I kind of blew that poem, but that's okay. All right, I have three more. And the next two are not pretty, and then the last one is. This is called Body Memories. What will it take to walk shameless? I don't mean brazen, those short skirts, high heels, and stockings are nice. I mean, what will it take to rid yourself of this black package? What will it take to turn the wine into water like Jesus? It will take an act of holy divination to walk past the liquor store without buying. It will take a bad liver, a bottom out. What will it take to stop picking your skin, looking for bumps, pretending you itch, which you do, but then you scratch, make it bleed, scab, scar? What will it take to stop binging and throwing up? You go months and then, like riding a bike, you hop back on. The bike goes faster and faster and faster, and you crash. You are getting too fat for the bike. What will it take to sleep through the night without rage in your gut, so close to your clit it burns? You clench your thighs, you shake your fists, shake the demons one by one from your bed. But like good monsters, they don't go far. They crawl under and await the next darkness. Sometimes it takes hours. Sometimes you have to get out of bed, go to the backyard, and bury something deeper. This poem's called Molly, and it's actually after a girl I met at the Cage. And I love the people I meet at the Cage, and she's great. And it actually, the poem got accepted by Pank, which was one of like my bucket lists. I was like, Troy's trying to get into Pank, and they took it. So that makes me very happy. But it's about Molly, and she talked to me a lot about Chuck Pol, and this is the other thing I can't pronounce, Polnick's work. And I'd never heard of him before because I'm not really into that sort of thing, but she talked a lot about him, so I had to look him up. And so this is thanks to Chuck Polnick and Molly, and it's called Molly. I keep thinking about the taxidermist, the one I met at the bar, who scoops roadkill from Route 28 with her apron on, deplumes the turkey in the trunk of her car in a lit strip mall at 1 a.m. so as not to disturb her landlady with an obsession for feathers, evisceration. She drinks framboise. She's not a real redhead, you know, and won't work for hunters. She salvages, repurposes, makes necklaces from fox teeth. And to hear her tell it, the day the contractors pulled the plug on her freezer was the saddest day ever. She lost everything. I mean everything. And her eyes are really big. She reads stories about boys jacking off while sitting on the circulation pump at the bottom of the pool. So bent on coming, so holding their breath, they don't notice their large intestines being sucked down the drain through their asses and have to bite through the rubber flesh hose of their colons and the corn shit inside them to save themselves. She recommends the author highly, and you feel yourself shutting up about metaphor loss, longing, sick to your stomach, holding your breath. And I keep thinking if you were here, you would fall in love with her too. Except you'd want all of her. You'd be sad when she says she's too busy with knives, totems, grouses to bother with a boyfriend. That she loses a part of herself every time she hooks up. Her name is Molly, Molly, Molly. And I repeat it like the name of a cocktail storm stray. Like the name of the girl that poor boy was beating off to when his cum came like pearls in the chlorine, when he floated naked to the top to find his insides out. Woo! I like that. Probably makes you not want to talk to me at the cage. She was a taxidermist. She moved to Lawrenceville. I don't think I'll see her again because you know how Pittsburgh is. But I liked her. So I'm going to close with a poem from Liquid Like This. It's the last poem in the book, and it's one of my favorites. And I wrote it for, I think for my daughter, for my lover, and myself. I think I wrote it for everyone. And it's called Heart Time. For days now, I've been hearing my heart beat in my dreams, in the city wind, on the radio. I've been counting up and down in the back of my brain, adding and subtracting like an insistent abacus, the discs clicking the restless wooden bodies together through the night and into the morning, stirring coffee six times round, then seven, then eight. It comes to me that I can measure beauty this way by counting my presence in this final world. I can calculate how much it matters to appreciate the sun, to walk home with a barrette from my daughter's hair in my pocket, reminding me of time, soft skin, the first kiss and its pulse, the throb of thunder timed exactly before the lightning, the flash, and with each beat, I draw further away from myself, knowing only in the end I will hear your voice saying the silence is full and the water quiet. Thank you.